Good afternoon, everyone. This is Whitney with the Conference for Women, and I have Laura Munson with me, who is going to be presenting for the next 30 minutes, Get What You Want by Getting Out of Your Own Way. For those of you who just joined a second ago, you would have missed my announcement, which would be to encourage you to take out a piece of paper and perhaps a pen or open up a Word document, so that you can jot down some notes and thoughts as Laura guides us through her presentation. And if Twitter is something that you are engaged in, Laura, you can find her on Twitter at Laura Munson. And for those of you in Texas, at Texas Women is how you can follow the conference, at Mass Women for the Massachusetts Conference, and at Penn Women for Pennsylvania Conference for Women. So, Laura, before I open up the line for you to start our presentation today, I want to share a little bit with the audience about you. Laura is a New York Times and international best-selling author and also the founder of Haven Retreat, which she leads in Montana and in other prime locations across the U.S. In fact, the next Haven Retreat is in Boston, directly following the Massachusetts Conference for Women, and she's eagerly and busily booking up all the ones in Montana for 2014. Through lauramunson.com and her Haven Retreats, Laura guides writers and non-writers alike into digging deeper into their creative self-expression and changing their lives in profound ways. Laura, it's been a pleasure to work with you on preparing for this teleclass, and I know that I've been inspired just by our back and forth, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say to the audience today.
Thank you, Whitney. I've loved it too. And welcome to all of you who are here for this teleclass today. You are all seekers. You're all on a journey. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. So welcome. And the teleclass is called Getting What You Want by Getting Out of Your Own Way. And I'm going to run you through some slides for about 15 minutes or so that will help you identify places where you might be in your own way. And then we'll go through some powerful questions that will help you to raise your self-awareness and reprogram the way that you think. So you can follow along with the slides as we go, and then Whitney and I will have a conversation at the end. Does that sound good, Whitney? Okay, great.
Sounds fantastic. Right.
Okay, good. So slide two is what my goal is today. My goal is to help you raise your self-awareness so that you can claim your life, see where you're stuck, get out of victim stance thinking and into practical, creative thinking so that you can get your life to work by actively creating your life. So I hope that a lot of you, if not all of you, are following along on the PowerPoint that is listed on the site. That will greatly help the way that we do this. So slide three is called Setting Your Intention. I want you to think about something that you really, really want. Not something material, but maybe for a relationship to heal or for a new job or for your teenage daughter to be nice to you. And now count on the count of three, I want you to say it out loud, something that you really, really, really want. You can yell it, you can speak it, you can whisper it depending where you are. Maybe you're at work, maybe you're at home, maybe you're in your car, who knows. But I want you to think of something you really, really want and definitely utter it. Okay, so one, two, three, something that you really want. For me, I would love to get a novel published. That's something I really want. All right. So now, slide number four. We're going to step outside of wanting, actually, and into creating. So getting what you want by creating what you can create. I want you to replace the word want with the word create. Because as long as we're in wanting mode, we're reaching outside of ourselves for our happiness. But when we're in creation mode, we're actually taking charge of our lives. So change the word want to the word create. I am creating healing in my relationship with my spouse, for instance. I'm creating a new job. I'm creating having a healthier lifestyle. Isn't that much more empowering? I think it is. And when we start changing the word want to the word create, that's when things start really changing in our lives. So I'm just going to tell you briefly my personal story, and then we can move on to some powerful questions. So for 20 years, I lived in a world of wanting. I wanted career success. I wanted to be a published author. So I wrote book after book, and I'm not kidding you. I wrote 14 completed books, not 14 good ones. And I didn't submit them all to editors, but 14 books for my entire adult life and was mostly met with rejection. I was totally defined by my career success or failure, and I was miserable. I was drowning in ambition and wanting. So I hired a therapist, and she said, "So let me get this straight, Laura. You base your happiness on things entirely outside of your control." And I said, "Yeah, I guess I do, if you put it that way." And she said, "That's total insanity, just so you know. When we base our happiness on things entirely outside of our control, we really are living in insanity." I finally got it. She was right. I was living in insanity and powerlessness. I was an emotional victim. I was not emotionally free at all. So I flipped my thinking and started to focus on what I could control, and that was doing the work that I so loved and letting go of the rest. And it is interesting that when I let go of the outcome, that's when I became a New York Times and international best-selling author and gained all sorts of accolades in my career. But in it all, I've learned that success and failure are myths. It's about doing the work that you love with all your heart. And I'm on a mission to help inspire and empower people to do the work that is uniquely theirs to do. And that's why I do speaking engagements, and that's often what I write about, whether it's in fiction or nonfiction. And that's why I lead my Haven retreats. Getting what you want by getting out of your own way begins with self-awareness. It has to do with the way we think, but behind our thinking, there has to be an awareness of this. Emotionally, pain is inevitable, but we don't have to suffer. Pain is inevitable, but we don't have to suffer. Suffering is a choice, and I got sick of suffering. So now slides 6 through 10 are the categories that I find people to be most in their own way. Again, it all starts with awareness, so hopefully these will help you gain a new awareness around these potential offenders in the realm of emotional freedom. So slide 6 is getting aware of your inner dialogue. It is so crucial to become aware of how we talk to ourselves in our minds. So really start paying attention, because once you do, you'll be horrified. Most of us wouldn't talk to our worst enemies the way that we talk to ourselves. Particularly when we're bathing suit shopping, especially in Target, I suggest do not go bathing suit shopping in Target unless you're wearing sunglasses. I speak from experience. But I'm not talking about the conscience here. The conscience keeps us from lying, cheating, stealing, jumping off cliffs. But we don't need to bully ourselves into making those good choices. The inner critic has no real place. And all too often we confuse that and we think that we have to bully ourselves to keep us in line. And that's simply not true. So start becoming more aware of your inner dialogue. I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine. She lives in my head. Her name is Sheila. She is slide number 7. In order to become aware of my inner critic, I had to name her, and I suggest that you do the same. I don't know where I came up with Sheila, and I apologize if that's your name. At first, I thought I had to exile her like some sort of criminal. But then I realized that she was just a scared little girl that lived inside of me, and if I was to wage war against her, then that meant that I was waging war with myself. So I started to love her and to offer her a warm maternal embrace when she got loud and abusive. And guess what? She got quiet because mommy's in charge. Everything's going to be okay. And she quiets down, and that's what I want. I want for my inner critic to calm down and let me be in charge. So the next slide is about the world of yes, stepping into the world of possibility, the world of yes. So why wouldn't we be in the world of possibility or the world of yes? Why are so many of us living in the world of no and no way and not possible? I think it's because we're in a story and we think the story serves us. Usually the story is negative and it's spun by the inner critic. Men always leave me in the end. My dreams will never come true. I'm not the kind of person who ever gets, you know, fill in the blank, a raise, a promotion, an award, affirmation, validation. I'm a loser is what so many of us hear so much of the time. What the stories we tell ourselves usually have in common is this, emotional victimhood. So that when we walk around all the time with our hands out and our fingers pointed, we don't have to take responsibility for our own happiness. And why would we do that? Because I think it's because we get to be right. See, my boyfriend left me. I'm right. Men always leave in the end. See, I didn't get that promotion. I'm right. I never get the accolades I deserve. I got really sick of making myself right for making myself wrong. Really sick of it. And it's another form of insanity, and I just complain, quit it, and it changed everything for me. And I encourage you all to do the same. The moment I took responsibility for my own happiness and flipped my thinking, everything changed, and my dreams started coming true, and that's because I was in the world of possibility and the world of yes. It's so freeing to live in that world. So the next slide, slide number 9, is about the gap, I call it. Emotional victimhood is a myth. So here we're going to dig deeper into this concept of emotional victimhood. It's really actually pretty easy. It's playground politics 101. How often do we hear ourselves or a colleague or a child say, she made me so mad, or he makes me feel so guilty, or she makes me feel sad? It's actually not possible. Nobody can make you feel mad or sad or guilty or even happy. I can't actually take a serum of sad and inject it into you and make you feel anything. We have choices around the things that people say and do to us emotionally. Physically, that's another story. If somebody punches me in the face, I'm likely to get a black eye and I can't control that. But emotionally, we have choices. What if somebody told you that when you were a child? I know I would have lived my life so much differently. So there is a gap between the things that people say and do to us and our emotional reaction to them. I want for all of us to widen the gap and powerfully choose our emotional reactions. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with feeling mad or sad or guilty or any emotion. I just want to be in charge of my emotions instead of them being in charge of me. So if I'm going to freak out, I want to powerfully choose to freak out. And why is that? Because I don't want to suffer. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. I can't say that enough. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is a choice. So start a new awareness around this. You are responsible for your emotions. Your emotions are your choice. Okay, now slide number 9. This is my favorite one. Pass the salt. Actually, this is slide number 10. Pass the salt. This does not meet our needs at this time. I don't love you anymore. So here we're talking about dealing with rejection, and this is big stuff. Most of us are never trained in how to deal with rejection. I've had a lot of it, and I've cut my teeth on it, and it hasn't always been pretty. So this idea of choosing our emotions, especially around rejection, is new news to many of us. And so let's go easy on ourselves here. This is about retraining our minds, how we assign meaning to the things people say and do, and how we stay outside of suffering, how we stay in a place of being responsible for our own well-being. So I've learned to practice on something easier than I don't love you anymore or this does not meet our needs at this time, which is what you hear from publishers. That's what the standard rejection is from publishers. This does not meet our needs at this time. I've learned to practice on pass the salt. It's too easy to hear I don't love you anymore and have it mean you are unlovable, or this does not meet our needs at this time and have it mean that you are unemployable or untalented. Let's practice on pass the salt. So let's say we have just prepared a beautiful meal and we have invited our friends over for that meal and we've bought beautiful organic food and we've set a beautiful table. We all sit down. We dig into our food and one of the people at the table says, they take one bite and they say, pass the salt. Well, we can have that pass the salt mean all sorts of things. In a split second, we can get insulted, or we can feel ashamed, we can feel angry, all sorts of things. We can feel like we're a bad cook, we can take it personally. We're in a place of suffering when we do that. Or we can flip the meaning, and pass the salt can just mean that they like salt. So what? Pass them the salt, no big deal. The point is, you're not suffering. There's no payoff to suffering except for that you get to be right. What is the payoff for getting your pants in a bunch? Nothing. You get to be right, and then you suffer because of it. So tune into how does that feel, making yourself right for making yourself or other people wrong. It's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. So practice on pass the salt. Maybe don't practice on I don't love you anymore or you're fired or this does not meet our needs at this time. Practice on something as simple as pass the salt. Okay, now we're into the powerful question section of this teleclass, because you know what powerless questions sound like, right? Why can't I ever, or why does she always get, or why does this never happen to me? Those are powerless questions. We've got to stop them. We've got to reprogram the way we think and get into powerful questions. So Whitney told you to hopefully have a piece of paper out right now or a computer document open, and I'm going to go through four slides which address the categories we just went through using powerful questions that will help you get out of your own way. So grab a pen and a piece of paper, get that computer document open, and I want you to write down just a few words for each of the questions underneath each of these categories that will help you to answer them later when you have some time to yourself. Make some time for yourself either tonight, today, tomorrow, over the weekend, maybe before bed or early in the morning. I really want you to take time to flesh out the answers to these questions so that you can use them as a guide, especially when you feel stuck in your life. These questions will be archived here on the site, so you don't have to write them down now. Just write the topic header or the slide number so you can go back and write them down later. So for now, just take your knee-jerk reactions to these questions, whatever comes to mind, just one or two words. And these are powerful questions designed to help you get out of your own way and reprogram the way that you think. So we're going to begin back with the inner critic. So you can write down inner critic, and then underneath that, just read the questions, and then you can write down just a couple words that you can refer back to when you have some more time to really flesh these answers out. So whose voice is she speaking in? Whose voice is your inner critic speaking in? And when is she loudest? When is she loudest? What does she say to you? She's usually pretty mean, you know. She might say that you're fat or ugly or that you'll never have any friends or that you're going to end up alone in a van by the river. I mean, the inner critic is not nice. What does she say to you? Get really real with yourself here. What would happen if you treated her like a scared little girl that you love? What would happen if you treated her like a scared little girl who you love? Okay, the next slide. This is slide number 12 under powerful questions. This one's called the flow. This is about really tapping into what comes most naturally to you. Who are you really? Not who do you think you should be. We're going to get rid of should here and into who you really are. So what do you most like to do? Whenever I meet people, I say, what do you like to do instead of what do you do? And their eyes always blink open like, really? I get to talk about what I like to do? So what do you most like to do? Not necessarily what you're good at, because too many of us are in jobs that we're really good at but that we don't like, and that's unfortunate. I want us to get into what we most like to do, what flows most naturally from us, and how often do you do it? Really be honest with yourself here. How often do you do it? Because if you don't do the thing that you really love to do very often, it helps us gain an awareness around the incongruencies in our lives. And the inner critic will bully us into, great, you just got that club membership. When's the last time you went? Well, do you even like going to the club and working out? No, is the answer in my case. I'd rather take a walk with my dog. So what do I most like to do when it comes to exercise? Take a walk in the woods. Well, that's how I should set myself up. I should set myself up for completion and win instead of failure. How can you build a career around this thing that you love to do? How could you build a career around it? Dream a little here. Get out of no and into yes. Play around with possibility. Can you bring it into your daily life? Can you bring this thing that you love to do into your daily life? And what would that look like? What would it look like? Again, we're going to be able to go over these questions again, and they will be archived on this site so that you can refer to them when you have some more time to yourself. The next powerful question category is in the realm of practical creativity. The most powerful question I know is, what can I create? And I ask it especially when I'm feeling stuck or going through a hard time. So when you're facing hardship, ask yourself, what can I create? It doesn't have to be anything grandiose. You don't need to have a glue gun in your hand. You don't need to make a holiday decorative wreath. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it can be something very simple. And in fact, when you're going through a hard time, when you feel like you're in your own way, when you feel stuck, it's important to come up with something very simple that you can do. So what are three simple things that you can do when you are having a hard time? Three simple things that you can do when you are having a hard time. Three deep breaths. The power of counting to 10 is highly underrated. Counting to 10 helps so much. Making a cup of tea. Stop multitasking. Maybe take a walk outside. Whatever you can do that is totally accessible and doable, that needs to be something that you fasten to your heart and that you practice as a lifeline, especially when you're feeling like you're stuck. And then the last slide under powerful questions is self versus self, the story that we tell ourselves, because we all, for the most part, are in some sort of story, and usually that story is in conflict with your true nature, and it's the story that is usually a myth that we live into because we're used to it. So I'd like you to change your awareness around the story that you tell yourself with these four questions. What do you lead with when you first meet someone? I noticed one time that after my father died for about 3 years, I would lead with, my father just died. Why was I doing that? I had to start creating a new awareness about what I lead with. What do you lead with when you first meet someone? Where are you in a fight in your life? Where are you in a fight in your life? Remember, knee-jerk reaction, one or two words right here. These questions take longer to answer, and I want you to really focus on them when you take that time for yourself, and I sure hope you do take that time for yourself to answer these. What do you resist that you know is good for you? What do you resist that you know is good for you? I have a list a mile long to answer that one. What do you resist that you know is good for you? And finally, where do you tell yourself that you are not enough just the way you are? Where do you tell yourself that you are not enough just the way you are? It usually starts with the phrase, I should. I should be going to the gym. I should be writing that award-winning novel. I should be, et cetera, et cetera, more patient with my children. It's important to tune into the I shoulds and get rid of them and start telling yourself that you are enough just the way you are. In fact, if you write that on a post-it and put it on your computer or on your nightstand, I am enough, that can really change your awareness and the way you think. So now we're going to go to slide number 15, which is the statement of intention. I want you to write a one-sentence mission statement during this teleclass before you get off this teleclass. I want you to write a one-sentence mission statement for your life that you can refer to daily for affirmation, focus, and guidance. And then I want you to return to that thing from the beginning of the teleclass that you said that you wanted, whatever it was that you really, really want. And I want you to start the sentence, I am creating, and then fill in the blank with what it is that you really want. So I am creating a new job. I am creating a better relationship with my adolescent daughter. I am creating a healthier lifestyle. I am creating. So we get out of want and into create. And then when you have some free time, write that down on a piece of paper. It should be very simple and short. And put it someplace that you love. So if your computer or your office is not a place where you're happy, then put it next to your stove if you love cooking. Or again, on your nightstand when you wake up in the morning, and you can read it and refer to it over and over again. I am creating. Refer to it as often as you can, especially when you're feeling lost or having a hard time. That statement of intention is so important. So I have given all of us a lot to think about in 20 minutes, and I encourage you to take this stand for yourself in the field of self-awareness and getting your life to work. If you want to do more of this work, you can go to my website, lauramunson.com. You can sign up for my newsletter, my blog, where we do a lot of this sort of stuff. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. And I do still have space for my upcoming Haven Retreats in Montana for 2014. And that's where we go deeply into our creative self-expression. So if you're interested, go to my website, lauramunson.com, to the Haven tab, where you can find details and contact info. And I normally lead my retreats just in Montana, where I live, but I am leading a rare East Coast Haven in Boston directly following my workshop at the Massachusetts Conference for Women in December. So we still have space, and we're offering a special package to anyone from this teleclass if you contact us by the end of today. So that is the end of the teleclass. Whitney, I want to thank you and the Conferences for Women and all of you for being here today, and I encourage you to journey on.
Laura, thank you so much. And I actually have a couple of questions, and I know that we still have a ton of people on the line listening in. So you mentioned our inner critic who goes with us to Target to try on bathing suits and sits on our shoulders as we're raising our kids. Is there ever a time where the inner critic serves us? And what's really the difference between our inner critic and our consciousness?
Well, I think that's a great question, and I think our conscience is our compass. Our inner critic is a scared, loud bully. And, you know, I go in and speak with kids in fifth grade, and I notice that they don't really have that inner critic yet. It starts around sixth or seventh grade, and by the time we're you know, 47, 48, that's my age, that inner critic has had lots of years to gain speed in her voice and in her muscle. So, you know, I think that to reprogram our thinking in that we don't need the inner critic, we don't need to bully ourselves to make good decisions. You know, and a lot of us have this turned around in our minds, but we don't have to be mean or to run scared to make good choices, and we can change that story.
So there's a lot of parents on the line. So for those of us who would want to teach this awareness that you spoke about to our children so that they'll really understand it, they'll listen, they'll learn, they'll actually apply it to their lives, what would you recommend?
Well, it goes back to the playground politics 101 that I was talking about. Nobody can really make you feel mad or sad or guilty or anything. And I noticed that when I work with my kids in the car, and they're well aware of it because they're sick of it, but they'll say, you know, so-and-so made me so mad today. And it's like, actually, Sally can't really make you mad. There is a gap between the things people say and do to you, and I want you to become aware of that gap. How does it feel? How is it working for you to feel like Sally can control how you feel? You know, and I think that if you learn that at a young age, it will completely inform the way that you go into your future relationships and your reactions to the things that people say and do to you. So I think really it begins with that awareness around what's the payoff? We get to suffer at the hand of somebody else emotionally. That's not a very great payoff. And if we can learn that at a young age, hopefully it'll change the way we live our lives.
So last question is, you talk a lot about changing our lives, so getting them to work the way that we want, getting unstuck, stepping into what is possible for us. So how is it that you suggest we take a stand for ourselves when we perhaps don't have the support of those closest to us, like our colleagues, our peers, our family, and when at the end of the day there's bills to pay and we need job and financial security?
Right, and that's why it's so important to have that statement of intention, because it's fine to go to the library and take 25 self-help books out or buy books or go online and try to bullet point enlightenment, but that's too daunting for most of us when it comes down to just what happens driving our kids to school or standing at the kitchen sink or being in our office at work. I mean, life is daily, as my grandmother used to say, and we have to have coping mechanisms that are easy enough and simple enough and memorable enough that we can refer to them, especially when things are hard. So that's why that statement of intention is so important. In fact, you know, I am creating whatever that is, fill it in, and maybe make three of them. Put one in your office, one in your car, one on your nightstand, so that you can refer to it all the time. And I cannot tell you, three deep breaths goes a long way, just to stop your thinking, to identify where it's being abusive to you and not helping you, and widen that gap between the things people say and do to you. Get in touch with how you're suffering emotionally and choose to tell yourself a different story. You are enough just the way you are right now. And again, refer to that statement of intention. It helps so much.
All right, Laura, you're amazing. Thanks so much for joining us. And for those of you in the Massachusetts area, Laura will be presenting at the Massachusetts Conference for Women, so there's still time to buy tickets if you have not already done so. Laura, thanks again.
Whitney, it was a total pleasure, and thanks to all who showed up today.